ahead, start it.
I'll start now.
That they have evidence that the thing was signed in case it's ever lost. What is today?
18th. Oh, I usually have my Fitbit on.
I'm going to wait to check those until I hear if I say anything stupid.
Absolutely, feel free.
It is, it's the 18th. I know her major. What's your major, Shale?
I'm majoring in supply chain management and business Spanish.
Neat. So, you're Shale who?
Brenner.
Is your brother Sage?
Yes.
He's in my human event class.
Oh, wow.
And you are Courtney. Spell your last name.
Voltmering. It's V as in Victor, O-L, M as in Mary, E-R-I-N-G.
Okay. So we'll leave these sit here and I'll sign that other part afterwards.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. All right. Hello. This is Courtney Voltmering. I am with Shale Brenner interviewing Dr. Deluce. I'm so sorry.
That's right.
On March 18th at, it is, what time? 1:40 p.m. in Dr. Deluce's office on the Tempe campus. This interview is part of our Barrett Oral History Project. Our goal is to preserve a record of Barrett's history in honor of the 30th anniversary. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and share your experience. So what brought you to Arizona?
I was born here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think at your age and older, there's a lot of people that were born here. But my age, there weren't so many people that were. Yeah.
So what kept you here then?
Well, initially family, and I am a first-generation college student, so I wasn't necessarily encouraged to go to school. So I came upon going to school sort of by accident. In my first job, somebody said, "You're too smart and interested in the world to not go to school." And so I started taking a couple classes and then wound up in this path. So it just turns out that this is a good school. I was lucky that I lived nearby enough to come here. And even when I went to graduate school, I did look at other places for the programs that I was interested in, but they weren't ranked as highly and they were going to wind up costing out-of-state tuition and all these other things, so it made more sense to stay put. So I had been exposed to the campus as a child, roller skating, when I didn't know really what a university was. It was just this nice big place that was empty on the weekends and you could roller skate here. But it was interesting years later when I wound up coming back as a student and starting to get an appreciation of what higher education in a university was, the role that it played in the community.
Yeah. Do you mind me asking, what made you pick Arizona State then? You had other options.
Yeah, I suppose I could have gone south or gone north and stayed in the Arizona State system. But again, it's hard to beat ASU in terms of the overall constellation of things that it offers. And while I did move out when I was 17, I've been supporting myself since then. I think that's part of why I stayed here, is because my network was here, the jobs I was cobbling together in order to put myself through school were here. The idea of moving to another town and having the novelty of all of that would come with that just didn't seem, at least at the undergraduate level, it didn't seem appealing, because why would I when this is in my backyard? And I did start at the community colleges because that was what was even closer to home and what was affordable. But I didn't even, never even occurred to me to come to the university until, again, I was getting straight A's at the community college and talking to a faculty member, and they said, are you transferring to ASU? And I'm like, huh, there's an idea. It hadn't even, you know, like, yeah. I said, it hadn't occurred to me. But I remember there must have been some linkage between the systems that I got an email. No, it wasn't an email back then. Email didn't exist. It was a printed letter, and it's probably still in my baby book at home somewhere. Oh. But it was at the very beginning of the University Honors College at ASU. I graduated from Mesa Community College as the valedictorian in 1988, and that's when ASU was starting their University Honors College before it was called Barrett.
Yeah.
And they invited me to be in that first class of what we are in right now.
Wow.
But I was, again, working my way through school, didn't have any role models about going to school. It didn't even make sense to me why I would take on extra work or additional fees to be in an honors college. I knew it appealed to me. I did take honors classes, AP kinds of things in high school and at the community college, but the idea of trying to adjust to a university with all that extra, I didn't realize what I would get from it for what it would cost me in terms of time and money and inconvenience. But now, with the benefit of hindsight, I wish I had found a way to work it out, because I do believe that there is value in the experience that the students get here, and I would have been interested in getting that value myself earlier in my life.
Well, thank you for sharing. So what led you to, I guess we've already discussed that a little bit, but what led you to desire to study at Arizona State?
Well, yeah, in addition to the things we've talked about, I think having the world opened up to me in terms of all the different things that you could study,
yeah,
and the value of pursuing additional education, not just for the job skills, but for the personal growth kinds of benefits that one could experience. So these days, like we were just talking about online stuff, there's a kind of, do you know what I mean when I say the word catalog? Is that in your,
yeah,
vocabulary?
Yeah.
You know, you might think of a mail order catalog that comes to how you choose shoes or clothes from or gifts.
Yeah, not quite what you meant, though.
But back then, we had a course catalog, and
yeah,
it was only available in paper.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just sit there and sort of thumb through it, or you could fall down on the floor and open up to a page, and you'd go, I didn't even know there were classes on that. That sounds interesting. You would, at least I, accidentally discovered just a whole world of knowledge that I didn't even really think about before. And I think it's harder for kids today to do that, because unless you have the right keyword or the right prefix, you're not going to run across it as easily when you're scheduling classes. When we used to schedule classes, you had the catalog and a paper schedule, and you had to do so much tracking with your eyes that you actually found unique things that you might want to take as electives or consider as a second major or minor or something. So I was genuinely interested in learning for learning's sake. And it did occur to me, as I saw the world changing around me, that it couldn't hurt to be educated and to pursue these kind of things. Again, my dad wasn't in favor. He did show up at my graduation from MCC because I was the commencement speaker. And the deeper I got into school and the more accolades I got for being a star student, he started to pay attention and think, well, I think she's really stuck on this path. Maybe there's something to it. I think he started to think about it in a different way. And he turned from disinterest or discouragement into neutral, mm-hmm, to at least, you know, proud by the time I got my PhD. But it's not that he wasn't educated. I mean, you see those books on the top two shelves over there that looks like a nice set?
Yeah.
Those are the great books of the Western world. And he bought those, he saved his pennies and bought those and read them himself. He educated himself, reading his way through the great books of the Western world, which a lot of people use several of those in their human event classes, and it's formed the foundation of a lot of educational systems. So I certainly don't think one has to go to the university to become an educated person, because I know my dad was smart, but he thought, I did it on my own, so why do you need to go and do it? But later, he could see the value in it. And I certainly know that there are people that do spend their time and money here and don't leave with as much education and wisdom as some people have without pursuing an education. So, but I still wish everybody could and would.
Yeah. How has your major in communication prepared you for your career in Barrett?
So, yes, when I was an undergrad, I majored in communication, and we had, I don't know if you still have to, but back then we had to pick a track, and I picked three tracks because I was an overachiever, so I did the extra classes to do three tracks. So I did interpersonal communication track, intercultural communication track, as well as the organizational communication track. So I think it prepared me on all those three fronts. On the interpersonal level, when you're facilitating discussion / seminar-based classes rather than giving lectures, you do need to use some interpersonal communication skills in order to encourage people to discuss, read body language. There's a number of students that raise their hand with their face. What I mean is they don't like go like this. They just kind of crook their head or raise their eyebrow a little bit, or there's something that tells you that that student wants to jump in right then. So I definitely pay attention to nonverbals. I use a number of the skills in terms of using them myself, modeling them for my students, as well as telling my students to paraphrase, to perception check, to not assume, but to ask questions. I'm very big on pursuing a spirit of inquiry as opposed to a spirit of judgment in how we approach things. And of course, that blends over in with the intercultural. It's easy to stereotype or come to assumptions based on quick cues about people, but asking good questions and challenging your own assumptions is useful, as is being open to incorporating multicultural texts in the class. And there was a long time in the history of the human event where it was more like a Western intellectual tradition class, even though it was never intended to be. For some people, it still tilted that way a little bit more because it was their comfort zone. But in the past 10 years or more, we've made a more explicit effort at making sure that we bring in non-Western kinds of authors and underrepresented voices in different ways so that people have that opportunity to experience a little bit, have their awareness raised a little bit around different cultural backgrounds without it necessarily being an intercultural communication kind of class. And organizational studies-wise, also it connects because a lot of what we're looking at in the human event has to do with how institutions have changed over time. If you're looking at that flow of important ideas and how we've shifted to different kinds of justice systems or different attitudes towards gender or slavery or all of these different things, they echo or are founded in major institutions like religious institutions or political institutions. And thinking how organizations are structured just kind of folds into how I think about things. Of course, I also minored in psychology and business, or the equivalent thereof, and so I have a constellation of things that kind of wrap up into how I think about being prepared for Barrett as a teacher and as a colleague.
Why did you choose to teach at the same school that you studied at?
Well, it is sort of rare. I mean, there are a number of people here who have done an undergraduate degree here, gone someplace else for a graduate degree, and ultimately wanted to come back to the Southwest or this institution for any number of reasons. It just happened to work out for me that I got to stay here the whole time. I did get my PhD in psychology here, and again, I could have gone other places, but the expense and inconvenience of going other places didn't appeal to me when ASU's psych program is one of the best in the country. And I'm talking like the year I was in, there were something like 400 applicants and they only chose four, you know, and there were other programs that were there that were even more competitive than the one I was in. Competitiveness doesn't necessarily help define what goodness is, but once you get into a program like that, if you think the fit is good, you're crazy not to go if that's part of your goals. So that's one of the reasons I stayed here. But then I demonstrated my effectiveness and responsibility, my commitment, my work ethic, etc., enough that when I was finishing grad school, there was a constellation of things that happened, a confluence of events that I was invited to stay in a position there. And then there were some, but you grow and you change, and I've always tended towards interdisciplinary thinking. So there was a nationally competed job posted. They were getting applications from around the U.S. and around the world. That's how most faculty positions are hired. So I got hired into interdisciplinary studies and spent many years there. I grew and changed some more, and then entered a competitive search and ultimately found my way to Barrett.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. How did you, because you were in a variety of departments before you came to Barrett, is that correct?
I was in the psychology department, and then I was in leadership and interdisciplinary studies.
Okay.
Which, when my undergrad, as we've discussed, was in communication with the psychology and business aspects too, but even within there, there's interdisciplinariness. Yeah. And at the time, the field of communication was pretty young. So a lot of the research that we read in the upper division classes came out of psychology or social psychology or organizational psychology. So I decided to pursue psychology for graduate school. But, it was an important... In a university like this, you can recreate yourself without having to switch universities because there's so many schools and colleges that... I then steeped myself in interdisciplinary theory for a number of years and then decided, how can I take all of that and take it into a space that is working with extra-motivated and extra-prepared students compared to the mix that you'll get out in the more general population and still pull from different disciplines as we do in the human event, but... honor the history and wisdom of the past as we also look at how it's current to how we live our lives now.
Yeah. In your clip on ASUhistory.com, where you describe your book, Arizona State University, you said, when Denise and I decided to study ASU's history, a large motivation was to expand our own appreciation of the place and share it with others. How has your appreciation of ASU changed with your findings?
Well, you already know of my humble... innocent kind of beginnings in encountering this physical space and people on it. And sometimes we just move through our world and we don't really even, especially now, you see students glued to their phones. They're not even looking at the people around them. But it's amazing. As you're walking from here to the MU or you're walking from here to wherever, you could be passing people that are working on curing cancer or solving the world resource problems around 8 million tons of plastic going into the ocean every year, or how to help developing nations have clean water. You are passing by the faculty and the staff that are changing the world. And we just tend to think of ASU as this, a lot of people, I shouldn't overgeneralize, but you know, it's just this institution that sort of took over Tempe or helped grow Tempe, and it's the Sun Devils, and it's causing traffic or it's causing parking issues. I think the focus should be on what this institution does in developing the lives of each individual person that's studying here, as well as what they're doing in terms of their community embeddedness and the ways that they're contributing to research and practices that actually help the world. So I already started to get a sense of that the more I was in psychology and interdisciplinary studies, and when I started researching that, digging into existing archival information as well as trying to find anybody under the sun who I could talk to from different stages of the university's growth and different disciplines. It's humbling to see all of the different things that people are doing. And I can't really remember the stem of your question, but what did I learn? I learned that my native sense that something important is going on here was just really expanded in terms of every person I pass. Maybe they're just doing this because their parents told them to go. Maybe they just, quote, want a better job. But that can be part of it. But I think that there's just as many or a greater number that, while of course we need jobs, there's something more to it. And, yeah, that mix of respect and humility. Because in the grand scheme, compared to some of those people, I feel like a drop in the bucket, but we all have our own different way of contributing, and it usually does take a team effort.
Expanding on that, what was your most interesting discovery, and what was the reaction to it like?
Oh, the most interesting discovery. I know you looked at the book online, but I don't know if you've looked at it yet, but I mean, there's just so much of it in there. It's hard to say. You should look at it when you get a chance. It's just so fun and snippets that, you know, you can absorb. And I wish I had time to look that over. A couple things that come to mind that, here's a silly one that people often relate to, but there was the Boy Scouts built a cabin in the attic of Old Main. I think that was a surprise to me. It was also a surprise to me on a more, like, serious note that John S. Armstrong, who was basically the founder of ASU, hardly ever was getting the credit that my research indicated that he was due because of he moved away. And another important person in the history of the college is Hayden. So you would hear a lot about Hayden because Hayden's right. family was still here and he's easy to find to interview and all of that. And certainly he played a role, but Janice Armstrong was the person that went to the legislature. He's the one that was the teacher, he and his wife, that could see that this area would be a perfect place to do teacher training. So as I said before, everything's a team effort.
Yeah.
But I gained a new respect for that founding father, if you will. And I don't know if you know, but one of his would it be great-grandsons? Great-great? I think it's great-grandson is W.P. Carey.
Oh.
So, you know, that descendant went on to honor his ancestors, what he started. So there is a building named after Armstrong. It was Armstrong Hall, and he's connected to the law department, but I think they should name a street after Armstrong, if not officially, somehow put one of those little signs and make it, you know, Armstrong Way or something, because I think he was really key. Other things, just, it didn't matter what I was looking at, there was some interesting appreciation that developed. I'll try and think if anything new came to mind. Well, I don't know if you knew, Barbara Barrett was a student at ASU.
I did. I actually got to interview her.
Yes, and yeah. I did too, and that she's, of course, an inspiration. And I made sure to work a picture of her in there because I think she's such a positive role model and, of course, an important figure in the development of the university via their contribution to Barrett.
Yeah.
I guess we should move on. I'll try and think if there's something else that stood out to me.
Absolutely.
Oh, you know, I don't know if you've noticed because people are glued to their phones, but there's so many beautiful plants and Palm Walk and digging into the history of how Palm Walk started and finding those pictures of when the palm trees were so little and look at them now. It's interesting that we really are building on the shoulders of the thoughtful work of people that came before us.
Oh. Have you ever thought of teaching a course about your findings from your co-authored book, Arizona State University?
I hadn't until just now, but I think that's not a bad idea. I could think that through because it really does pull from multiple disciplines, and whether a student was interested in history or not, there could be an appreciation for, yes, the history of how the seeds of the aspirations and design imperatives that we talk about now and how ASU is number one in innovation now. Part of that is through the leadership of President Crow and the great contributions of the faculty and our inclusive approach to how we admit students. But it also is partly due to the foundation that was put in place by these others. The seeds of all of those things we brag about now were already in place in the past. So I think there could be a segment in a class that helps people understand the identity of a university and the role in a community in the world. It could look at it economically, socially, from all politically, a number of different levels. Plus, students could dig into the specific disciplines or research areas that they're interested in, using some of this as a springboard. I think it could be possible. Do you have a sense that students are actually interested in the institution, or are they just kind of like, this is where I go 5 days a week and I'm going to graduate from there?
I mean, I think especially in Barrett, you would have a good number of students who are interested in learning about the history of this college. I mean, we're doing a project that's a course of people that are interested in how Barrett was formed. So I think certainly there are people that are interested in how Arizona State was formed. And just from the short clip that I watched, I tried to find the book, but the bookstore didn't have it.
Oh, you have to probably find it on Amazon or a different bookstore.
But, I mean, I just think people would be really interested in learning it.
I'll keep that in mind.
Let me know if you make the course.
Okay.
Kind of segueing from that one, have you ever thought of teaching a course about your findings from the book, Legendary Locals of Tempe?
Well, similarly, I guess the same principles would apply. I think there are people that are interested in local art scene, local politics, local, I guess music could be part of the art scene. All of the same things that I talked about in regard to ASU could be connected to Tempe. In fact, one of the reasons that I wrote the Tempe book is because I encountered so many interesting people that just weren't the right fit for this book. But ASU and Tempe grew up hand in hand, and they just needed to be discussed or acknowledged in some way. So that other book needed to be written, and I probably could have written volumes, a separate, in fact, I did consider doing multiple volumes, but I decided it would be better to have one accessible volume than to have people having to choose between them or the like. So maybe it could be a class that combines them.
That was my next suggestion.
I will be thinking on these things.
I think it would be really interesting.
You could bring in some local speakers, either from ASU or other places, and have them maybe perhaps interview one person that they're interested in. I appreciate the idea.
You're welcome.
I learned so much from my students and other people's students.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you like it. So in your paper, There and Back Again, Learning from the History of a Freshman Seminar Sequence, you describe the evolution of this course, the human event. In what ways do you see the course evolving moving forward?
To some degree, I'm not sure that it needs to evolve. That's not to say that it won't, or that we won't experiment in some way or another going forward. But I actually don't think, what's the expression, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And we've done these tweaks at being much more conscious of incorporating underrepresented voices or non-Western. Mm-hmm. And we did that experiment I talked about in there in terms of going deeper into some specific domain or helping appreciate the perspective people would come from differently. And I'm glad that we tried that experiment, and I'm also glad that we moved away from it for the reasons I discussed. There's ideas thrown around somehow, sometimes now and then. For instance, a number of people would like to reduce the amount of writing in the class, or when we're being really bold, even talk about getting rid of the writing component altogether. Mm. But then that would put all of the pressure on the public discourse side, and there's always some students who don't participate as much, but their writing really is good, and you can see their thinking and engagement there.
Yeah.
And there's other students who are excellent discussants, and they need to work on their writing. So what we've learned is that to help you, the royal you, of the Barrett students be their best, to have both components, because just resting on the laurels of what they think things should be like or what they did in high school usually isn't going to be enough. And if without a class like this, they may not be as well prepared for doing their thesis or some of the more rigorous honors contracts, etc. So we would in some way like to emphasize the public discourse because we'd like the quieter people to speak up in a day and age where learning how to engage in polite evidence-based discourse instead of just shouting each other down and twisting evidence to use it however we want, but really having thoughtful discourse. We need to see that more in the media than we do. And so that's an important contribution this class makes to the future citizenry and leaders. But being able to do that in writing is important too. So it would be easier for us to grade if we didn't have the writing component. So, you know, people throw ideas around and maybe we'll experiment with some of those sometime, but I kind of doubt it because it does work as a cohesive thread to help prepare the students for more rigorous training and build cohesion, and give them a chance to, in a relatively safe space of the human event class, try on a lot of things, open their mind, learn to take on different perspectives.
How do you think the evolution of the course has impacted the students' ability to think both critically and creatively?
Based on what the students tell me, I'm sure you're going to just, you know, the normal bell curve, right? That there's most people are going to fall in this average space and some are going to be excellent and some are going to be below average. I think you might get that kind of bell curve if you were to talk to students about the human event. There's going to be, most of them are going to like it okay, know that they got some value of it. I think our curve skews to the higher end. Even if they don't appreciate it in the moment they're in it or right after they get out, when they look back at their 4 or 5 years in college, they realize that that was a different sort of class that helped them in meaningful ways. They can't always recognize it right away. So I think it would skew positive, but you're always going to have some that are more of the cheerleaders and some that say, I hated it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I tend to think people get out of it what they put into it, which is a bit cliche, but I think it's true. But even those that don't always put their best selves into it, I don't know how they can't get a little bit better at their creative and critical thinking through just being there and listening to the discussion and taking whatever growth risks they took in their own participation or writing.
How do you think that that compares to the History of Ideas courses, with consideration that transfer students have kind of, they've had life experience prior to coming to ASU?
Yeah. In an ideal world, I'd still love to even see the transfer students have a 2-semester sequence. In an ideal world, I'd like to see the human event be a 3-semester sequence because we start with the most ancient texts and move through about Renaissance in the fall or in the first class and then around Renaissance to modern in the spring. And there's usually, in any one person's arc of development, there's something that gets slided a little bit, either the deep ancients or the Middle Ages or something gets slided. And I think there's so much more wealth of knowledge that we could explore. And the extra semester would give the students even more time to develop as readers and thinkers and writers. But so I would love to see the transfer students do too, but that's unlikely in the grand scheme of the overbusyness and speed that some of our educational components require. I do think that they may be, it's hard to say, Courtney. I think that the History of Ideas students that I've encountered have been comparable. It is true that they have more life experience, so sometimes they can bring a little bit more wisdom to the table, but the other side of that is sometimes the longer we've walked the earth, the more set in our ways we can get, and it can be a little bit harder to crack open the egg of being more open-minded. But I can't really report that I've had any problems on those fronts, but those are possibilities.
Yeah.
And it may just depend on the group of students you get. And
yeah, one thing I'd actually like to add to that, I took History of Ideas because I transferred into Barrett as a junior, and I was the only non-transfer student in my class. I actually don't have very much to say about it, but I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
Because I was there.
I do think that some of them are, because they're already more ensconced in their life, they're busier. It's hard to believe because I know we're all already so busy, but they may be busy sometimes in different ways that makes the class be a nice break, a place to sit and think about some of these important, interesting things. But for other people, the class is a lot of work, and it's something that they need to integrate in. But if you're going to an honors college, it's not just that something's more work. It's not that we're just giving you more work because you're in an honors college. It's just organically more work to be a more more of a seeker, trying to get a better, more rigorous experience. I don't know. Did that cover that enough?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah. What would you say has been your proudest moment in your time at Barrett?
Proudest moment. Well, I haven't really thought about proudest. I can tell you some proud moments. I mean, I felt some pride in being selected to join Barrett because these are a great group of colleagues that are, you know, when I'm in my, we all probably have these moments where we're like, oh, other people are smarter than I am, or am I going to fit in? And some of these people speak Latin and Greek and all these other fancy things, and I don't, but we all have something that we bring to the table, and that's one of the things I like a lot about being in a department, a college that's interdisciplinary at its core. We still probably skew towards more history or literature people, and they can all be very different from each other as well. I'm not saying they're all cut from the same cookie cutter, but I do like it when we hire people from the social and natural sciences or from other kinds of things, or when people have an interdisciplinary background, because it helps us realize you can just go up and down this hall, and if there's a text you're just not 100% sure about, or you're thinking about taking something new on, there's somebody around here who knows stuff about that better than you do. So I think one can feel pride in standing in the place of what they bring to the table, and at the same time feeling humility when you look at all the things you don't bring to the table, and it helps you realize that we're a good group, especially when we work together. I felt pride when students nominated me for that Excellence in Diversity Award or the Centennial Professorship. These are since I've been to Barrett. I mean, I was nominated for other things before, but there's that Apple Polisher Award that students that are those sun devil, the devil's advocates that walk around backwards and give tours. You know, they pick somebody, and I've been chosen for that. I like it when I guess it's just like anybody else. You like a little pat on the back now and then, or a little recognition, even if you don't win it. Yeah. I know some of my students are nominating me right now for a Faculty Women's Association Mentoring Award, and I'm sorry to say that on tape, because now if I don't get it, well, I guess I did say I didn't get all those other ones, too. But what's interesting is I used to work almost exclusively in interdisciplinary studies. I was working exclusively with juniors and seniors. Mm-hmm. And they had a different understanding. I actually did win some of the awards they put me up for. But as over here, working mostly with freshmen, they're not into the system quite yet, you know. Yeah. And they're still very much thinking about their own survival as opposed to who's really contributing to their development.
Yeah.
I'm proud about all the different things that my students are trying to do or are doing, which I become aware of through when they ask me for advice or letters of recommendation. I'm proud of some of the things I think I've contributed to our development as a faculty, however subtle they may be. I try and be a good colleague and help us come up with policies or perspectives that help us be collaborative instead of competitive, etc.
Yeah. Oh.
I guess, yeah, I'm proud when books come out and stuff. I'm proud when I get my human event grading done. I'm also exhausted.
Yeah, I bet. It's a lot of papers. What legacy do you hope to leave from your time as a Principal Faculty Honors Fellow at Barrett?
Well, I guess building off of what I was just saying, I think the most important legacy is my students. And I know I'm not their only teacher. And I know some of them have a love-hate feeling for me or the class. But I do believe that whether they're aware of it or not, or would admit it or not, I think, I hope, that they're getting some value from every course they're taking at ASU. But I know that I put everything I can into to to every course I teach. And even though I've been teaching a very long time and am generally well regarded as a teacher, I don't stop learning. I took that, I took a graduate level course that ASU wanted some of the faculty to kind of pilot and see if they thought it would, if we thought it would be a good course for new teachers to take. And that took a ton of time, and I knew a lot of what they taught, but I still got new ideas, and I'm always asking for feedback. I get ideas from teaching assistants and process things with them. So legacy-wise, I'm trying to model and show that even inside one person, we can appreciate different disciplines, and we can keep growing at any time of our life. I am still a work in progress, and I hope that the body of my work and my way of being helps students realize that they can be okay at whatever stage they're at. It doesn't, we're not fully baked ever, and that we can keep improving, and that if they carry with them some sort of insight or attitude or habit of mind into their other classes or how they live their life or how they serve as a citizen, then I guess I'm playing my role, because I may not ever win some big, gigantic prize, but each student is a prize.
Oh. Well, thank you so much for your participation. If you have any more thoughts to share later, please feel free to reach out. And if you have any questions about this interview or the 30th anniversary oral history project, please contact my esteemed foot.
I will. And also, we didn't do that thing where you got the room noise, so do we want to just be quiet for a couple minutes?
We should use your recording.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It didn't work.
I did the recording, but it ended up using my laptop speaker. I couldn't get it to... I didn't know.
That's okay. Later. That's why we have backups.
Yeah.
Okay.
My bad.
All right.
Well, it was nice to meet you, ladies.
It was so nice meeting you, Dr. DeLuce. Thank you so much. DeLuce.
DeLuce.
Oh, goodness. I am so sorry.
That's all right. That's why my students...